You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me again this week. We have a great show for you, a phenomenal guest who I love this guy. He's been on the show several times, Major Travis Yates of the Tulsa Police. But before we get into the interview room, there's a couple things I want to go over with you before we go into the briefing room. And that is, I really want your input into our show. And the best way to do that is on Facebook. If you go to my page, that is the Voice of American Law Enforcement, and connect with me. Like the page, follow the page, and then connect with me. Let me know what you think. And if there are guests that you think you'd like to hear on the show, I can reach out to them. So please, give me your feedback on it. I would love it. If you're a Twitterer, go to LT Randy Sutton and give me your comments there. The other thing is, we really want your support of The Wounded Blue. Our film, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed, is now on not only Amazon, but also iTunes and the Microsoft Store. Please support this organization. Watch this film and then go to the website, thewoundedblue.org, and join us in our mission to assist injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room because we got lots to talk about. There have been four tragic deaths this week. Four more law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. One of them I want to talk about in particular. And this was out of Sacramento PD. A four-month police officer who was killed. She was murdered. Police officer Tara O'Sullivan. She'd only been on the job 4 months. She was still in field training. She had served as a community service officer prior to this with the Sacramento PD. She wanted to be a cop more than anything. She got her wish. And she gave her life. She was murdered in a which was basically an ambush. She and her training officer had gone to a domestic dispute. Now remember, domestic disputes occur in the law enforcement world sometimes 3, 4, 5 times a day for every police officer. And they don't have to be necessarily violent. Anything that is related to a domestic situation is considered a, quote, domestic dispute, unquote. They don't always result in arrests. They don't always result in violence. Sometimes the police just get there to mediate stuff that's going on. That was the case here. The female half just wanted to move out. And so the officers were assisting her to do just that. They were standing by while she was taking some clothes out to move out because of a abusive situation with her husband. And while Officer O'Sullivan was attending to this, basically she was outside with the woman while she was taking her clothes out, the male half was upstairs with a rifle and opened fire, striking Officer O'Sullivan. Then he continued to lay down a deadly barrage of fire towards other law enforcement officers who returned fire, but he was in a position where he could be using the house for cover. Deadly situation. And unfortunately, because he had such command of the field of fire, the other officers could only watch while Officer O'Sullivan was laying there bleeding out from rifle rounds. Now remember that a ballistic vest will not stop a rifle round, only pistols, and sometimes not even that. And this was the case. I mean, she was hit several times. She was laying there helpless. and the other officers were unable to drag her to safety. It took about 30 minutes for an armored vehicle to get there and allow the police to get to her. Well, by that time, it was too late, and she was dead. So she only had 4 months on the job. She was still in her field training period. This sacrifice, this tragedy, is something that is heartbreaking, not just for the law enforcement community, but for the whole Sacramento community. Well, maybe not the whole Sacramento community, because what took place at the scene of the shooting is something that makes my blood boil. It is absolutely unconscionable what took place at this scene. Police officers were trying to set a perimeter because the rifle fire from this suspect, rifle bullets travel literally miles. And so they were trying to set up a perimeter around this scene to protect the community. Well, what happened at the perimeter of this scene is something that is absolutely disgusting. Members of the, I'm going to just call this quote, the community, unquote, attacked these officers who were on the perimeter verbally with such disdain and disgust, screaming at them that they were glad their cop was dead. And this is on video. If you watch this video, if you go to bluelivesmatter.blue and you'll see the video. It's almost unbelievable that human beings like this even exist, that their level of contempt and inhumanity towards law enforcement is so pronounced that I have to consider them subhuman. And I know that's going to probably raise some eyebrows, but I don't care. Because if you care so little for the lives of other people simply because they wear a uniform, you're a pig. You aren't even deserving of the label of a human being. What took place at this scene, how these officers kept their cool, how they were able to just kind of walk away and ignore these creatures, saying the most vile things to them, trying to incite them. It was a low point in humanity. This officer was just at the beginning of her life, you know, in her 20s. She chose a career to help her community, and she gave her life doing it. And that same community turned on her. Well, no, that's not true. Certain people in that same community turned on her and celebrated her death. I don't know what kind of civilization we're becoming when this becomes an okay thing to do. But I can tell you this, I'm glad that I wasn't the officer on the line there, because I'd be suspended right now for my reaction to what they did and what they said. This is something that the American law enforcement officer is now dealing with on a consistent, constant basis. This disrespect, this hatred, this malevolence, this inhumanity, this lack of compassion, this lack of empathy, even when they give their own lives. Very sad state of affairs. Well, let's move on. A judge has ordered a special prosecutor to investigate the Jussie Smollett case and Chicago State's Attorney Kim Fox. This is good news. Kim Fox is one of those, quote, activist, unquote, district attorneys or prosecutors. She has a political agenda, not a law enforcement agenda. She was given the office, basically, if you will, by the forces of social activism. Money was poured into her campaign, and she was elected. Well, now the chickens are coming home to roost, because Kim Fox is uncaring of the people of Chicago. What she cares about is her own political agenda and that of George Soros, who funded her campaign. Well, with the Jussie Smollett case, everyone, you know, is pretty much aware of this, unless you've been, you know, living under a rock. But Jussie Smollett was indicted on 16 felony counts for faking his own racist, according to him, attack on himself by MAGA hat wearing people. Well, turned out to be nonsense, lies. And a exhaustive Chicago Police Department investigation revealed that they were lies. And he was indicted. Well, Chicago backroom politics live and well. Kim Fox, who allegedly recused herself, was pulling the strings. And what happened? Oh, suddenly the case against him just disappeared. And all the charges were dropped. And all he had to do was forfeit his $10,000 bond. And Kim Fox thought she was going to get away with it. Well, not so fast. The outcry was tremendous, not just from law enforcement, who has been battling with this prosecutor who has been so anti-police, anti-law enforcement, but the public, even the media, got unbelievably turned against her. Well, now a special prosecutor has been appointed by a judge to investigate the Smollett case, and also the prosecutor's office. This is going to be worth watching. This could, well, there's no doubt in my mind that this will lead to a re-indictment of Jussie Smollett. But I hope that it will also lead to the indictment for corruption of the Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, because she clearly is in the pocket of certain individuals who pulled her strings like a marionette. And this is going to be interesting to watch. Let's go from Chicago to New York, where more madness is going on. My best buddy, Mayor de Blasio, is showing his true colors once again. The New York City mayor restricts when cops can enter school grounds. Yeah, you see, the mayor doesn't want the police actually enforcing the laws. So what he has done, he basically said, okay, schools can't call the police anymore for, you know, things like, you know, when teachers get beaten and things like that. We can't have the police there for that because it would be unfair to those students. And so he's limited the ability for law enforcement to react to crimes on campus. And in his world, his weird de Blasio alternative world, that's okay. Because we don't want to protect those teachers. We don't want to protect that administrative staff. We just want to let kids. And remember, you can be 14 years old and pull a trigger, and that's been done a whole bunch of times, right? You can be exceedingly violent at 14 and 15, but not be held accountable if you are in the schools, because Mayor de Blasio is using his power to circumvent the criminal justice system. Now, let me be really clear. this isn't really something new, that the social justice groups have been hampering law enforcement in schools for years, but now this takes it to new heights. And de Blasio, the incompetent social justice politician that he is now exacerbating the situation and hogtying law enforcement even more. So one more thing I want to talk about before I have to say goodbye, because we're kind of running out of time, and that is that another New York City police officer committed suicide outside of his police station. This happened just a couple weeks ago, and now I believe he is the fourth New York City police officer in just about a month to take their own lives. This is an epidemic, ladies and gentlemen. All over America, we are now more than double the amount of police officers who have been killed in the line of duty, have taken their own lives this year. This is something that needs to be addressed. My organization, the Wounded Blue, is working feverishly to do something to assist these officers. If you are a law enforcement officer or a former law enforcement officer, and you are facing the pain, contact us, thewoundedblue.org. We have a fully trained peer support team made up of all injured and disabled law enforcement officers, all who have been well acquainted with the travails of a law enforcement career. We're here for you. That's why we exist. And the fact that four New York City police officers should be a tremendous red flag to not just the New York City community, but to the nation, that law enforcement officers are suffering. They're suffering internally. They're suffering emotionally. Much of from the things that I talk about on this show, because the war on cops is very real. We have to work together, the community, the police, together to create an environment that is healthy for law enforcement. These tragedies continue to occur. And the Wounded Blue and many of the men and women of law enforcement and of other organizations, we're going to continue to do everything we possibly can to stem this crisis, address it. And I implore law enforcement leadership to contact us and allow us to help. Our peer team is waiting for you. Contact us. Well, we've about run out of time here, and we're going to take a walk into the interview room where my guest is waiting. And I hope you enjoyed this briefing room. We'll see you again next week. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them. Contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is When you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that that you need a deodorizer for. This stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a man who I have not only a great deal of respect for, but who has made an incredible contribution to the law enforcement community. He's a major with the Tulsa Police Department and has served his community for more than 26 years. But more than that, he has shown his commitment to the law enforcement community in his leadership training, and also the fact that he is the only law enforcement officer who owns and operates an incredible online magazine called lawofficer.com. And now he's continuing his contribution as an author. And the name of this book is pretty powerful. The Courageous Police Leader, a survival guide for combating cowards, chaos, and lies. His name is Travis Yates. He's a friend, and he is a person who is contributing always to the American law enforcement community. Travis, so much happiness for having you on the show.
Randy, it's certainly a pleasure. I'm humbled you would have me, and I've counted some of the greatest joys of having you as a friend and a mentor, and I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Oh, it is a pleasure. So, you know, literally, we could talk and have talked for hours about the topic of leadership and law enforcement. And there is, this is a huge subject, especially considering where law enforcement is today. But let's, first of all, so I want the listeners to get to know you just a little bit. So if you would talk about your police career, and then we'll move on from there.
You know, Randy, I was very blessed to be born in a great family where my father was in law enforcement. My mother worked at the same school that I went to. She was a secretary there, very much of a middle-class upbringing. And there was never a question growing up. I was going to go to college. I was going to get my education. And I did that. And I don't think I realized I was going to go into law enforcement. But I made a grave error that so many other officers have made when they were young, is I went on a ride-along. And when I went on a ride-along, I thought to myself, you could actually get paid to do this. It was blew my mind what these heroes were doing. And so I worked very hard to get to where I was. I was Tulsa's not where I was from. I applied at several departments, ended up here in Tulsa. I've had a very blessed career. It's been a quick career. Very fortunate to be able to promote through the ranks, which, quite frankly, I didn't have an intention to do. Never had an intention to talk about leadership. Never had an intention to write a book on leadership. But I've seen law enforcement in the last two decades just change radically. And I have to be honest with you, when I first came into law enforcement, I started working for these sergeants and lieutenants and captains that were, you know, Vietnam veterans. You know, that was the era of the mid-90s, early 90s. And I got to be honest, I thought to myself, you got to be kidding me, man. I grew up with this guy, right? I grew up, my father was a Vietnam veteran, a hard-nosed cop, and now I have to work for this same type guy or lady. And I kind of look back, and I regret thinking that, because as law enforcement's had to face some incredible challenges, those really tough leaders, those good leaders that would stand up for what is right and righteous and good, those men and women of character, we're missing on that now. And I don't think we were prepared for what was going to come our way, which is why the book is titled that. We were, you know, what has come our way is cowards and chaos and lies, and that's what has come our way. And there's a way to combat that. It's an easy way to combat that when you're right and law enforcement is right. But we've not been prepared for that. And, you know, it's easy to put the blame on what's happened to law enforcement on the politicians and the activists and all the social justice warriors and all the nonsense out there. We certainly address that in the book. But at the end of the day, the reason law enforcement is having to battle what we're having to battle is because of these cowardly leaders that are sitting in our offices. And it is really it's a huge disappointment in my career that that's what's going on in American law enforcement today.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, one of the things that has been frustrating for me as a commentator and as a retired law enforcement officer myself is basically, you know, having to watch the ineptitude or the self-serving political correctness of many law enforcement leaders of major cities, and knowing how this is affecting not only the morale of the men and women who are walking the line out there, but also their effectiveness as well. And it seems like it's not getting better. It seems like it's getting worse.
Best part of law enforcement is the men and women that wear that badge that work those streets. I mean, if it wasn't for them, I would shudder to think where some of our communities would be today. They are overcoming such dynamic odds with the leadership that's around them. And all you have to do when you talk about political correctness is look at your most politically correct environments, your cities. Look at Baltimore. Look at Chicago. Look at San Francisco. Those communities are suffering greatly, and those departments are suffering even more. And so ultimately who loses when leaders are cowardly, who loses is yes, the officers lose, the departments lose, but those communities lose. Look at the crime rates. Look at what's happening when the handcuffs are put on the law enforcement officers and not the criminals. And the finger's being pointed back at the heroes behind the badge, and they should be pointed straight out at the politicians, the leaders, and the criminals that are creating those environments.
You know, and it seems that those people who are running for elected positions have a great deal of say when it comes down to choosing the chiefs that they're hiring. And instead of hiring people who have track records of successfully managing and leading people, they go for almost a political correctness regimen when they're looking for the people that they are bringing into these positions. And many of these people were in positions that failed, administrations that failed. You know, when I think of that, I think of the police chief up in Portland. And before she was hired by that incredibly political mayor up there, Wheeler, she was part of a command staff that had failed miserably in Oakland. Why would you pick a leader like that to put over a police department when the track record was nothing but negative?
Well, the only answer other than, you know, the people making those appointments are just horrible people is it's really easy, right? It's become really easy to pick somebody that will just go with the flow, just go with whatever the three or four activists in your office that day are saying to you. It's really easy to do that because the biggest way to be controversial in law enforcement today is to be honest. Just think about that for a minute. You know, you become a lightning rod if you're honest. If you actually say, you know what, the problem with our communities isn't law enforcement, it's criminals. The problem with community policing isn't the policing, it's probably the community that's not engaging with the police. You know, police, we're better than we've ever been before, Randy. We're more trained, we're more professional. We reach the community at a level like we've never done before. Heck, we're the only profession that literally records every citizen contact we make. And we continue to be accused of not being transparent and trying to hide behind a thin blue line and all this absolute nonsense. But the proof is right there. Everything we do is on camera. And you may say, well, the police officer wasn't wearing a body camera. Well, there were six cameras pointing at the officer at the time because everybody's got a cell phone.
Yeah, right,
when you really pin people down and say, show me the real evidence, they can't show you the evidence. They just can't. And that's why, unfortunately, the book had to be written. I wish we worked in an environment where I didn't have to write the book, where things were going great. People, leaders were standing up for officers. Leaders were standing up for the communities they serve. But at some point, I thought to myself, I can either sit around and complain and gripe, or I could try to do something about it. And I don't know how much it's going to do, but I know I've already heard from many, many officers that have been to our seminars and have read the manuscript of the book, and they said, thank you, because we thought we were the only ones that thought this. And they're suffering from just cowards all around them, from mayors to community activists. Not all community activists, by the way. Not all mayors, not all chiefs or sheriffs, but there's significantly enough of them where it's creating havoc. And if the only thing that I can accomplish by writing this, the 2 years that I've taken to do it, if the only thing I accomplish is the cops on the street read it and say, man, I'm not the only one that thinks this way. There's people out there trying to stand up for us. Then I think I've done something there.
I couldn't agree more. And let's, when we're talking about leadership, it's kind of a nebulous term. I mean, it can mean a lot of different things to different people. And when you're talking about the law enforcement community, there's so many different expectations from different people. It's really a tough job. In fact, I think if my memory is correct, the average lifespan of a police chief, when I say lifespan, I don't mean their real life, I mean their career life, is about 2.5 years. And people work their entire lives to climb that corporate ladder and get hired as a chief. And many of them find out that, I don't have any power. And the changes that they wanted to affect are basically, interfered with by the political process in those communities. So it's a very difficult situation to be in.
It's a tremendously difficult job. In fact, I would put the job of a major city police chief more difficult than the CEO of any company you can think of, because the police are expected to do more than they've ever done before. I mean, you look at the mental health profession. There's no money for mentally ill, so who's the end product of mentally ill? Well, we end up, unfortunately, having to try to deal with that. By the time we have to deal with it, unfortunately, sometimes it becomes a use of force situation. In fact, 50% of all the law enforcement shootings involve the mentally ill. You look at drugs. You'd be far-fetched to find a community that actually thinks we should be able to, people that do drugs should go to jail. So we're decriminalizing all the drugs. Of course, there's a cause and effect with that. And once again, about 40% on top of that 50% is the shootings being gone are people involved in drugs. So 90% of all police-involved shootings involve either mentally ill or drugs. Those are issues that, we used to be able to take strong enforcement action against those doing drugs. We wouldn't have to worry about maybe behind bars. Mentally ill used to be – I can remember a time in my career, which is relatively short, where if somebody's mentally ill, we could literally take them to a hospital for 3 days up to 2 weeks by our signature. Now, the worst mentally ill people, we can't even really do anything medically with them. And by the time we end up having to intervene, it's so far down the road. So we're having to pick up the mantle for all these social issues that are going on in America, and to point the finger at the police for being the cause of that is asinine. I mean, I'll tell one issue that I've been labeled controversial for talking about because nobody seems to talk about it, is fatherless homes. 89% of the prison population are prisoners that didn't grow up without a father. 89%. So you can't tell me that that's not an issue. Of course it's an issue. And you throw lack of education and poverty, which, by the way, comes with fatherless homes. When you have single mothers trying to raise a family, all those issues seem to come. Not that a kid can't grow up out of that and be fine, but there's such a disadvantage. And so these hardcore social issues are happening. The police are trying to deal with it the best they possibly can. They're well-trained. They're well-prepared. We have a technology to do that. We're recording everything we do. And the finger is still being pointed at the police when the finger ought to be pointed at the core issues, the foundational issues. And I think I know why. It's like what a magician does, Randy. How does a magician do their trick? You're right there in Las Vegas, so you know this too well. Is they try to get your eyes to look somewhere else, called misdirection, while they do their trick. And that's what's happening to American law enforcement today, is everyone's wanting to point at the cops. Meanwhile, bodies are dropping from drugs, mentally ills off the charts, suicides off the charts. All these major, major issues are off the charts. And the people that want to blame the police don't want you to think there's other issues involved. In fact, I got to tell you, back to being a tough job of a police chief, I know you and I have had some issues with the Phoenix Chief, even here recently. But she did something this week that I was really proud of her of. She said in a community meeting, and she said, you know what? Before you talk about reform of law enforcement, we should talk about reforming the communities. And she got booed off the stage. I mean, she had to leave the room. Wow. But for saying the truth, for saying the absolute truth. And that's when we talk about courageous leadership, we need leaders to stand up and tell the truth and be honest and try to fix these issues. And we're listening far too much to the what I deem the one percenters. And those are just the people that just hate authority. They hate law enforcement. They just hate. And the truth won't matter to them. We're listening way too much to those folks, and we're not listening to the good, hardworking citizens in our communities to do an effective job.
You know, let's talk about that for a second because, you know, there – when you look, I look at Portland because to me, Portland is one of the worst examples of leadership in policing, and of social ills, and it all goes to the leadership of the city, which is the mayor. He has appointed himself not only mayor, I mean he got elected mayor, but he appointed himself commissioner of police. Go figure how that works. And the police chief that he hires is basically an empty uniform, just does whatever the bidding of the mayor is. So, but the people of Portland elected him. He didn't come out of the clear blue. His stance on law enforcement was always what it was. Now, I mean, to be a Portland cop, they're fleeing. They're literally running out the door. They can't hire people because no one wants the job up there anymore. They just had a police test. They have 300 vacancies. Only 60 people applied, and only three could even pass the background test. So, what I mean, you know, the communities have to take some responsibility here for the people that they elect to run their cities.
Man, 100%. This really is a community issue. There's going to be a cause and effect for that mentality, that attitude, and that cause, that effect is high crime and poor living conditions. And of course, Portland is the center of all this. I would argue that San Francisco is trying to beat them out. They're neck and neck right on as far as horrible departments to be. And by the way, I've been to Portland a lot. Not Portland. I don't think that mayor would let me in his city, but I've been to the outskirts of Portland many, many times. And those cops are suffering. They're suffering greatly. I hear from them a lot. I know you do as well. I feel horrible for them because they got in this career like you and I did when things were different. We had courageous people standing up for them. They knew that they could do the right thing and people would defend them. And now we have officers that are literally shooting felons, pointing guns at them, and riots are ensuing afterwards. And you have leaders that aren't standing up for those officers. And yes. It's just a horrific situation. And you go to the other end of the spectrum, which is the state of California, that has literally changed the rules on use of force based on a justified shooting. Keep that in mind. They literally are moving away from the Graham v. Conner objective reasonableness standard because of a justified shooting in Sacramento. And then when a 26-year-old young female Sacramento cop is shot just this week, and the crowd turns on the cops and they can't even get to her because of the violence in there, that's the effect I'm talking about. Leadership isn't just, how's the morale here? It's literally an officer safety issue. And when you treat officers the way they're being treated, you're going to have certain people in the community that do the same thing to them. And it literally becomes a safety issue of life or death to these men and women behind the badge.
The reality is, in many cities, the movement that began much of this degrading of law enforcement was Black Lives Matter movement, and the movement itself was begun by three women who were non-apologetic socialists / communists who stated in their original charter, if you will, that their perspective was to literally destroy the criminal justice system of America. And it seems, and I hate to say this, but it seems that they have fundamentally succeeded in many areas to do just that.
Well, I will tell you, I think Black Lives Matter gets a bad name because of what you just said. I think many people involved in that movement around the country are good people. They're people that want to see some change, want to see some reform, but they don't understand the underlying the underlying premise of how that was formed. And that's just because we live in this generation where we read a couple sound bites and we form our opinion on it. And we certainly have seen a turmoil in the system, you know, since Ferguson, so to speak. Once again, a justified shooting. And we talk about all this in the book, how the law enforcement is reforming, and we've adopted all of these sort of radical reforms, i.e. taking police officers out of schools, decriminalizing crimes that cause a lot of issues in our communities. We have, taken away survival training for law enforcement and given them other types of training that, quite frankly, is mediocre at best. And we sort of adopted all of these rules based on, for the most part, lies. That's why the book is titled that. I mean, even when you nail somebody down and say, tell me what's wrong with law enforcement, they'll throw a couple of examples out there. And most all the examples are thrown out there have been justified shootings. And they can't even give you a real example. And so in the business world, that'd be unheard of. You know, if somebody came to the CEO of Microsoft and said, hey, we need to change your operating system because of this, it's this, they're going to say, give me the details, give me the evidence, show me where it's at, because this is radically changing things, could impact our users. Well, law enforcement, our leaders have not listened to the evidence. They have not defended the truth. They have sat there and taken it, and the changes in some of our agencies have been so horrific. We have, in 2016 we saw the most ambushes in the last two decades against law enforcement. In 2017 we saw more assaults against law enforcement than we've ever seen before. We've seen in certain cities violence skyrocket to proportionalities that we've never seen before. So there is an effect when you do that. Listen, I know you as well. We're all about making law enforcement as good as it can possibly be. We're all about reform. Law enforcement's reformed since the Robert Peel days. But when you do that, there needs to be a good reason other than I'm outside your door screaming with a sign, right? That's not a good reason to change anything. You don't want to do that unless you have good reason and good evidence to do that. And continue to throw out cases, and I mentioned California earlier, the Sacramento case, where, hey, if that young man didn't want to get shot, I say young man, 19-year-old criminal, felon, all in his background. If he didn't want to get shot, maybe he shouldn't have broken the cars. Maybe he shouldn't have ran from cops. Maybe he shouldn't have turned around and pointed an object at cops at night, which ended up being a cell phone. But I'm not going to trust my life trying to wait for that decision, right? And so there is a way to limit violence. There's a way to limit use of force, and that is, I got to agree with the Phoenix chief, that's not reforming the police. That's telling the community, hey, quit fighting cops. Quit being violent toward cops, because that's not going to end up good for you. And I know you're like me. I'm going to make sure my officers go home at night, no matter what. I don't care who gets offended. If you attack an officer, we don't get a chance to lose. We have to win every encounter. And what's happened is we've taken our eye off that ball, and we're listening to people that don't know anything about this profession. You look at the medical profession, Randy. I mean, the third leading cause of death in America is doctors. People don't understand that, but they kill roughly 250,000, 300,000 people a year. Not because they literally, you go into a doctor, you're healthy, you end up dying. 300,000 to a tune, that's on a low number. And we call those medical mistakes. It's the third leading cause of death in America. We generally have an understanding that doctors are working in a high-stress environment. You're trying to make a split-second decision. That sounds kind of familiar to us in law enforcement. And obviously, we're not killing people nearly at that kind of rate. And obviously, the vast majority of people that we have to unfortunately kill, it's a justified shooting trying to defend our lives or somebody else's lives. But we would never say, hey, we want somebody that doesn't know anything about the medical profession to go into the medical profession and tell them what to do. We want somebody that's not a doctor to go dictate policy and training for doctors. No, that's crazy. We would never say that. But in law enforcement, our leadership is so weak, we are opening the door, inviting people in behind our desk to change our policy, to change our training, that doesn't know anything about the profession. In fact, I've even said, hey, if you want to do that, fine. Come to a Citizens Police Academy, indoctrinate yourself on what the law says. Most of those folks will refuse. They don't want to know about that. And listen, I don't want to get caught up in that all activists are bad, because it's just not the case. There are people that mean well, but it's the bad apples, it's those 1%ers out there that are really causing mayhem in the law enforcement profession, and it's time we stand up against that.
Boy, wouldn't that be refreshing? I wrote a piece the other day where I coined a phrase, and I think that you will agree with this. And what we have seen in the last, I'm going to say 6 or 7 years, and I think the watershed moment was in fact Ferguson. We have seen such an emboldening of people who are willing to get into confrontations with police, that now we have a culture of confrontation. And this is exceedingly dangerous, not just for the police, but for those people that make the conscious decision to get into physical and argumentative confrontations with law enforcement officers.
It's extremely dangerous because, as you know, from a law enforcement perspective, we don't know why they're doing that. We don't know if maybe they're just being a jerk or maybe they have violent tendencies. You have literally no knowledge whatsoever on why. And the crazy thing is, and this is, you know, I realized how bad this was. I was in a community meeting a couple of years ago. I was with a counselor, a politician. He happened to be an African-American politician, but, you know, the community asked this question to him that they asked to a lot of these meetings. You know, my kids are scared of the police. What do I tell my kids? And this politician stood up and said, well, you need to tell the police to do what the police say. Which happened to be the same advice my parents gave me, right? Hey, when the exactly. police ask you to do something, you should just do it. And, you know, if you have a disagreement, that's not for the streets, that's for the court of law or for the complaint process. And when he said this, the crowd booed him off the stage, started yelling all kinds of epithets at him and just accusing this guy of – I thought to myself, what has happened to our society? When you say that what makes sense, right? I mean, if a school teacher tells you what to do or a lifeguard tells you what to do or a police officer tells you what to do, you should probably do it, right? That's always a good thing to do. And you have these parents that are screaming at this man for suggesting this, and I thought to myself, man, we've gone way too far here, and we've got to do something about this. And here's the good thing. There's a positive thing here. You say, well, how do we turn the tide? We turn the tide one leader at a time, one person at a time. That's how we start changing it. We didn't get where we are overnight. We're not going to be able to correct this overnight, but we've got to start somewhere, and that's why I'm hoping the book will come into play, because it literally will lay out to everybody from the first day officer to the chief of police or sheriff the steps you can take to kind of overcome some of the nonsense that's going on out there.
Well, there's certainly it should be a textbook that all police leaders are exposed to. You know, and you and I, you know, we spent a lot of years as cops. I learned some of my most valuable leadership ideas, if you will, from either A, my mentors, or B, those that were horrendous leaders that I vowed I would never be like, but I learned lessons from them just as I did from those who I really respected and thought that they embodied what leadership should be.
100%. And unfortunately, not everybody takes it that way. We have a phenomenon in law enforcement, what I call incestual leadership. And that is, you're around a bad leader, and then when you become in that leadership position, you take on the same traits as the person you sat there and watched. But you're right. Even if there's a cop out there listening to this and they're working for a real toxic leader, and I got a couple of emails this morning about officers that are in real bad situations, you can recognize what not to do. You can still learn from those bad leaders because you can basically say, I need to do the opposite of that, right? And that's a great way to learn. And then obviously we have to also get out of our heads in law enforcement that you're not a leader until you make rank. Because let me tell you, some of the best leaders I know in law enforcement don't have any rank.
Absolutely.
And our culture has created that. We've kind of created this class system, right, where, hey, you're a rookie officer, we don't want to hear from you. Hey, then all of a sudden you make sergeant 4 or 5 years down the road, well, all of a sudden you've got some more brain cells and we want to hear from you. Well, that's just ridiculous, you know? I mean, some of our brightest and best aren't supervisors. They're not of anybody of rank, and we've got to start empowering them to lead, because if we did that, we'd have a leader on every call, every day, every situation. Not everybody would be pointing the finger up the chain of command saying, it's not my call, it's their call. And so we've got to, you know, it's kind of like the military. Day one, we need to start teaching leadership skills, because our officers need to know, man, they have influence. In fact, you've got more influence than almost anybody in society. Day one, you have influence over the people you serve. You have influence over the community. You have influence over all these people. It's the best job on the planet, but it's being made very uncomfortable by a bunch of cowards.
I think one of the worst comments that I hear, and I've literally not only been hearing it for 30 years, I've actually said it myself, and that is, I'm not afraid of doing my job and the criminal on the street. I'm more of afraid of my own administration. This is the toxicity that many law enforcement agencies, that's the culture.
It's really unfortunate. I don't think the common citizen understands that the cops are more afraid of being on YouTube and more afraid of their bosses than they are the actual criminal element. I saw that tide turn several years ago, and whenever you read anything in the news that says post-Ferguson this, you can just immediately think it's a bunch of nonsense, because Ferguson was a justified legal shooting. Even President Obama's Department of Justice agreed with that. And so, you, once again, the reason they're scared of that is because they have seen what has happened to good policemen that did the right thing. They've seen their careers being ruined. I mean, we've got some of those stories in the book. It's what inspired the book to be written. I met Stacy Tell, who was an up-and-coming lieutenant out in Florida. He was at the top of his game. He was going to be a future police chief, I have no doubt in my mind, 17-year veteran. And he made the right call, right decision, justified shooting, and he was thrown under the bus in a heartbeat and just ruined him. He's done phenomenal things since then, but, I mean, he when his wife is having to sell her wedding ring just to pay the bills or to buy food, and when he makes 99 job applications and can never get hired because of what the Internet said about him for doing the right thing.
Right.
It's just horrific. And when I met him in person, it became more than a news story. It became more than a number. It became real to me. And, of course, since then, we've all dealt with – anybody that's been in law enforcement for a number of years, we've all dealt with similar issues of doing the right thing and being made to feel like a criminal. And we've got to get it back. We live in a great country. We have great communities. We have great people. We have great law enforcement professionals. And I am fearful that if we continue down this path, people are not going to like the communities they live in, and we're not going to be able to find good men and women to do this job.
Exactly. Well, we're running out of time, Travis. Where can people – I know the book isn't out yet, but certainly lawofficer.com is a vibrant publication. Where will they be able to find the book?
Book is published July 4th, Independence Day 2019. You can get that on Amazon. And you can go to the book website, and if you want to buy bulk copies, and we'll have links to buying them there at stopcowards.com. Stopcowards.com is where you can get all the details on the book. We're gonna make this as accessible as we can to people. And the last page of the book really speaks to why I think you and I both do this mission. It's a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Here's what he said. He said, "God will not have his work made manifest by cowards." Law enforcement's God's work. It's a servant's work. People are called to do it. And cowards are ruined in this profession. And I think it takes each and every one of us to stand up against that. And it starts with the person listening right now to say, "I'm going to do my part." And if we all did that, we would be able to turn this profession back to the greatness it once was.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Travis Yates, the publisher and owner of LawOfficer.com. Author, police leader, and the real deal. Thanks so much for coming on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay homage to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives in the line of duty during the previous week. Unfortunately, this week I have four names to read. The first is Patrol Officer John David Hetland of the Racine Police Department in Wisconsin. Patrol Officer John Hetland was shot and killed while intervening in an armed robbery while off duty at 9:40 p.m. He observed the robbery occurring outside of a bar on Lathrop Avenue and took immediate action to intervene. The subject opened fire on him, fatally wounding him. The subject fled the scene and remains at large. Officer Hetland has served with the Racine Police for 24 years. He is survived by his two children. Patrol Officer John David Hetland, Racine Police Department, Wisconsin. End of Watch, June 17th, 2019. The second is Police Officer Tara Christina O'Sullivan of the Sacramento Police Department in California. Police Officer Tara O'Sullivan was shot and killed at the scene of a domestic disturbance on Redwood Avenue at 6:10 p.m. She was standing in the yard while assisting a woman to retrieve belongings from a home when a male suspect inside opened fire with a rifle, striking Officer O'Sullivan. The subject continued to fire at other officers, preventing them from reaching Officer O'Sullivan and rendering aid to her. Approximately 30 minutes later, an armored vehicle arrived. They were able to rescue her from the yard. She was transported to a local hospital, where she succumbed to her wounds. The subject remained barricaded inside the home for several more hours while negotiators communicated with him. He surrendered at 2 a.m. Officer Sullivan had served with the Sacramento Police Department for 6 months. previously served as a community service officer. Police Officer Tara Christina O'Sullivan, Sacramento Police. End of watch, Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. The third is Trooper Jerry Smith of the Nebraska State Patrol. Trooper Jerry Smith was killed in a vehicle crash when his patrol car was struck head-on by another vehicle on Highway 26 near Bridgeport. An oncoming pickup truck crossed the center line after swerving to avoid another car that had stopped to make a left turn. The driver of the pickup truck was also killed in the crash. Trooper Smith was a U.S. Army veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom and a Bronze Star recipient. He had served with the Nebraska State Patrol for 5 years and is believed to be the oldest recruit to complete the academy. He is survived by his wife, two adult children. Trooper Jerry Smith, Nebraska State Patrol. End of watch Thursday, June 20th, 2019. And the fourth is Corporal Jose Speedy Espericueta of the Mission Police Department in Texas. Corporal Jose Espericueta was shot and killed as he and other members attempted to apprehend a subject who had threatened family members. A woman flagged down officers in the area of Stewart Road and Business Highway 83, told them her son had just shot at her car with a handgun. Corporal Espericueta and other officers responded to the scene and located the subject, who then fled on foot. As the man ran, he turned and opened fire, striking Corporal Espericueta multiple times. Other officers returned fire and killed him. Corporal Espericueta served with the Mission Police for 13 years. He is survived by his wife and two children. Corporal Jose Speedy Espericueta, Mission Police, Texas. End of watch, Thursday, June 20th, 2019. All of these officers served with distinction and honor and gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the voice of American law enforcement, like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on The Voice of American Law Enforcement.